the robotaxi revenue that that car can generate is ridiculous, regardless of what car has it. All of a sudden, that's a cash flow generating machine.
Wall Street should, in my opinion, be freaking out about their like complete miscalculation that AI is still several years away.
And it's becoming so obvious that we're gonna live in an agent world, an AI agent world, whatever you wanna call it, bots, AI bots, I don't care what you call it. But these super smart sort of prompts that you tell it to do something and it just does it for you. Their approach has just been go as fast as you can, get to unsupervised, and then once we're there, we'll figure out how to handle the carnage we've left behind. Quick introduction then. So Jordan has a channel on YouTube. The channel is called Savage Junkie. But what's interesting about that channel is that lately, since Jordan has downloaded version 13 of FSD in his car, he's uploading FSD videos. But what's very unique about Jordan is that he lives, or he drives at least, in New York City. New York City and Manhattan specifically. For those that are from the Northeast, y'all know there is like as if I'm like born and bred in the South, but I live in Texas now. It's like part of me now. Anyway, you got the five boroughs, and Manhattan is by far the craziest of all. It's one of the craziest driving environments we have in the United States. And what's very interesting about Jordan's videos is that they are showing some really impressive maneuvers. So I'll throw it over to you, Jordan. Kind of talk to us about sort of your journey with FSD, how you first got into it, what cars you own, and what FSD version 13 is sort of bringing to light from your perspective.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, thanks first of all for having me on. I appreciate it. Excited to be here. So we have an AI4 Model X, which is a 2023, and then we have a 2022 Model S that's hardware 3. But mostly drive the Model X at this point. Stumbled kind of upon doing this whole thing when we got the car a couple of years ago. We didn't even realize the car actually had hardware 4 at the time, but full self-driving wasn't available. So I ended up going online and just researching, FSD and trying to understand more about how the rollout would kind of work for hardware 4 cars. At the time, Tesla was not prioritizing full self-driving for hardware 4. It's kind of the opposite as it is now, where hardware 3 was the primary software primary hardware they were working on. So got into it that way. Been driving, I guess, daily with the car. We drive probably 20,000 miles plus on the car. Probably 18 or so thousand of those are on FSD. My wife and I pretty much use it exclusively at this point, even in New York City. Started with version, I think it was 11.4.4 on that car, because that was the earliest version we could get. The Model S we started, it was an earlier version, early version 11. But it was rough at the beginning with 11.4.4, because they kind of ported the crappy software from hardware 3 to hardware 4. So we had that. Overall, as my confidence kind of built in the car, we decided that we would pray that it wouldn't crash into pedestrians in New York City, and that I would start trying to make some videos. I had a mount for a long time, and I kind of decided that I wasn't going to make videos until I could confidently say that I wasn't going to kill someone or damage the car on a 15 to 20 minute drive. So, sporadically testing. And when V13 came out, I was I think we're finally at the point where I can just really let it go to town. And I've been coming up with really crazy drives, and we can obviously talk about my methodology for picking the drives and everything, but it's been insane. I'd say 98% of my driving since updating to 13 V13 has been on FSD.
Wow. Okay. So pretty dramatic improvement. What's interesting about your story is that, so my parents live in East Pennsylvania, and my dad drives into New Jersey every day for work in New Jersey and New York. When I used to live in PA, I remember that, New York's definitely a lot more dense, but New Jersey's kind of like New York light. You know, like Golden State Parkway. It's like, and then the way people drive, the aggressiveness and the way they cut in and out, and nobody has got any patience or nothing on the road. And then my dad's, he's got a Model 3 on hardware 3 that has 12.4, I think.
Yeah, 12.5.4. Yeah.
Yeah. And his biggest thing is like, it's not aggressive enough for me. It doesn't respond to things quick enough, right?
Yeah.
But watching your videos in New York City with FSD 13, it looks like it has taken on this persona of a driver that can drive in those situations. Would you say that is a correct statement?
Totally. I mean, I've had similar experiences before. I think 12.5.6.1, which is like when they brought the end-to-end highway stack. I mean, the highway performance was like laughably bad. It would like stay in the middle lane. You just get cut off like nonstop. I really didn't use it, especially in like bumper to bumper traffic, like situations similar to the Garden State Parkway. He's actually driving in Jersey today, which is funny. Finally, even in the standard mode, it drives aggressive, but it drives like smartly aggressive. So it like won't sit in the left lane very long if it doesn't have to. It won't sit behind slow cars, and it like decides to get over to the lanes in like a much more human way. They like the car used to like leave the blinker on for 10 minutes and then it would like turn off and then it would turn back on and then it would like try to pass the car and then it would just like give up and just stay in the middle lane forever. Like all that's like largely solved for me. It's pretty crazy. And it's so aggressive when it needs to be, but it's not like scary aggressive. And that's a big difference. You used to just like not have the ability to like predict when it was going to like dart out into traffic. And you can really feel the car like thinking now. And I know a lot of people have said that about this version. Like it's predictable in how it decides to make decisions. Like I don't expect it to jump out into the middle. I don't expect it to like run a red light in the city, especially when there's like five lights, you know, in front of you. Things that the heuristic or whatever the code, when they program all 300,000 lines, you know, they call it. Those versions like were just really unpredictable. The wheel just do scary stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. That's good to hear. So what you talked about, the methodology that you use for your drives, walk us through how you've built your drives to ensure that you're testing the system as best as you can.
Yeah. So I try to pick a theme for the drive before I go. If I'm going to torture myself to go over every bridge in New York City, like my last video, or if I'm going to like force the car through like complex downtown situations. So kind of once I decide that, you know, building up trust in what I even attempt, I'll like pull up the mapper for a while, you know, just sit in the car. Try to let the car, you know, get its feet wet every day, you know, hoping that like there's no weird regressions version to version. And then I just pick areas that fit the criteria of the drive. So for example, the financial district drive that I did, I just look through the map. You're like, okay, what are the worst possible turns that you could possibly put the car on? What are the most pedestrian centric areas in the city that you could possibly put the car through? And that's where I go. I mean, is it fun for me? I mean, yeah, when the car pulls over and I could take a second to breathe, that's very fun. But as it's going through it, you're just like, I would never intentionally drive on any of these roads myself unless I had to get to a specific destination.
New Yorkers so, actively avoid those scenarios, right?
I mean, like, yeah, if you watch the video, it's like all delivery people, and if you see all the TCL plates in the video, it's like 99% like cab drivers. It's very rare that an average New York City driver would go down there on purpose in their personal car unless they lived in the financial district and were commuting, you know, to Jersey or back to the Brooklyn area or something like that. So yeah, I avoid that. The drive of the GW drive I just did, I don't know why you would go through the Cross Bronx Expressway for fun, unless you're doing it. I feel like a bit of a psychopath going on these routes and talking to myself for 2.5 hours and just like praying that I don't end up at a body shop at the end. But yeah. It's been pretty good.
That's great. That so that I think that I think for the people that don't live in New York City, I think for the people that live in New York City are probably listening to this, and I'm wondering like if they're thinking, wow, like is it really true that there's a car that can drive itself through these scenarios, right? And yeah. I think what it's hard to convey the aggressiveness of a driver in New York City, the how pedestrians behave on the road, how it's just chaos. It's complete, yeah. Especially during rush hour. It's complete and utter chaos. And so, let me ask you one more question here before I throw it over to Hans. The pedestrian handling specifically, what are you noticing with this version? How it behaves around pedestrians?
So I'll caveat at the start. It's not perfect. It just isn't yet. I think that it's going to take a lot more training data specific to New York City to get it perfect, because people are just ridiculously unpredictable here. Like, they'll dart out in the middle of the street. Like, as you were saying, the car will think that they're going to keep walking, but they're just peeking out into like traffic so that they can run across at the like last possible moment. So is it better? Yes. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. I've noticed it handles like hand waving. People like give you like the green light, you know, go. It will do that. I think it's done a much better job of staying clear of the intersections instead of getting like hooked in the middle on like the corners waiting to like make a right or a left. And I think it's doing a lot better job of like kind of when like a lot of times the previous versions would get like stuck in the intersection because people would just like take advantage of the car being like stuck there. And now the car kind of like will creep through it, you know. Every so often you'll need like one pedal tap because the car like really doesn't want to like mow down a crowd, which I don't blame it.
Yeah.
But it's way, 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 way better than it's ever been. I can't imagine it's going to get even better. I can't imagine how much better it will get unless they are training specifically on New York City, like pedestrian scenarios. People don't really have any like rules here.
Yeah. So, go for it,
Hans. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just curious, based on all of your experience down in like basically torture testing FSD in some of the worst scenarios possible in the United States, you know, how do companies like Cruise and Waymo fare against Tesla FSD in these scenarios? Since they're obviously the leaders in self-driving technology and they're obviously going to win.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I've taken the Waymos in Arizona. It's hard to get in like a one-for-one comparison because, you know, the Waymos don't drive in New York. They don't have the city mapped. They don't have the scenarios that you could find in New York that like they're not testing this, or at least not publicly yet. Maybe they are like, you know, behind the scenes. I have a hard time believing that they will ever get to a point where they can do like all roads. Like Waymo doesn't even do the highway yet. I can't imagine like it going from we're not going to do the highway at all to it's going to get on the FDR or the West Side Highway and just drive safely. They just don't have the data set for it yet. Maybe it will happen, but it's just not like it's not like it's an immediate thing. They have a ways to go. And if they have to map New York City, they have a Herculean task to do it properly. And the biggest problem with New York is roads that are here today are not there tomorrow. They're doing road work. Like right next to my apartment in the city, they're building a 25-story building and three of the lanes are closed. How is the Waymo going to map through all of these issues? Sure, like it may be able to handle, you know, road closure. I've seen it do funky things. I've also seen the Waymos drive into like wet concrete before.
Yeah.
You know, and circle around the block over and over and over again, and people just get trapped in them. I just don't see it yet. I would love to drive one in the city though, if they bring them here.
Yeah. I think that's one piece of knowledge there that I think it's very important to convey to the audience, specifically ones that don't follow this closely, is in places like New York, some roads are just not available even at certain times within a day. like either for right. trash pickup, delivery pickup, right, or delivery and stuff like that. There's some, because a lot of these roads are one way and they're very narrow, and then yeah. sometimes what they have to just close the road, and then they have to get stuff done, and then they open it back up. Even if it's not officially closed, you just won't be able to get through because there's just people offloading and unloading, and then you just have nowhere to go, or the space you have to go through is so freaking tight that yeah. it's like you're like this much off from either side, right? And I think that's what's so interesting about Tesla's approach is that because they're going with the vision-based neural net end-to-end approach, they're not dependent on maps and knowing totally. What roads are available to them. They just handle the situation as it comes. And so
yeah.
the super interesting thing here is that you can take Chuck Cook's car in Florida that is running on version 13, and you can literally drop that exact car in New York City, and it will do exactly what your car is doing. And that gets right. lost in this whole discussion with a yeah. broader public that doesn't understand this approach deeply. And what's even more interesting is that this is really one of the very first public versions of FSD 13 that is out there in the public, yep. right? So like totally. Your point of like, how is this going to improve? You yeah, know,
there,
it's like,
there's a yeah. long list of changes that are like in the coming soon section. Like yeah. they're supposed to scale the model for the car, like the literal data set 3 times, the contextual window, which is very important because it needs to see signs that are like very far back in the city and on these highways. The car only has like a certain amount of memory. Like it's kind of like a person with Alzheimer's, like it only remembers like a short amount of time right now. And yeah. in order for it to drive in these scenarios where it like sees signage like 500, 600, 700 feet back, it's got to remember that stuff. So I think that 3x contextual like improvement and the model scaling on their own are literally like going to be a massive, massive leap. We're running like, I know ChatGPT and like Grok, they have like the mini versions of the models, right? That's what we're running right now. I know Omar from Whole Mars Catalog has the same thing, you know, same yeah. thought. This is FSD 13 like mini right now. At least that's how I understand the release notes and everything.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's only going to get better is the scariest part.
For sure. Hans, can you give us like a quick like summary of why the model scaling 3xing is such a big deal?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple of different things we've touched on here. The model is already 3 times bigger. So that's like the overall size of the brain. So, you know, the human cortex is significantly larger than, say, a monkey's cortex. And that allows us to do a whole bunch of cool things that monkeys just straight can't do. And the model size for FSD version 13 getting 3 times larger, it's very similar overall dynamic that is at play there. But then the other thing that you said, you know, it's not only is the model bigger, but then the context length is going to be 3 times bigger. So that's context length is kind of like working memory. It's almost, you know, if you understand yeah. computers, it's almost like RAM. It's yeah. the information that the model has immediate access to as it's trying to think through, you know, what is it that I need to do to make this decision? And, you know, this is something that is easy to understand. If you have to make any sort of decision, like the context that you're using to make the decision has a dramatic impact on the decision totally. That you're going to make. And so giving it the information that it needs to make the proper decision and having more available information is a very important piece of the puzzle. And it's yeah. one of the things that just overall in machine learning, we find that really improves. Like that was one of the first things that when ChatGPT started to get better, it's like, okay, hey, you know, if we can just give it more context window, more things that it has loaded up in working RAM, when it gives you the answer, then all of a sudden, poof, like you can take the same exact model and you can get something that's 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 times better as yeah. a response out of it. And then the same thing will be true for FSD. And so that's something that's coming and really exciting to see their ability to do that. And I mean, it's one of the things that people have a lot of questions like, okay, hey, you know, is this all stuff that's only possible because, you know, they're running these models on hardware 4? And I think that, you know, it somewhat remains to be seen what we'll be able to do with Hardware 3, but it certainly allows us to explore the frontier of what is possible with a fully artificial intelligence, like neural net, a digital neural net, and some digital cameras that act as a brain and a set of eyes. You know, can that actually drive a car as good as or better than a human? And Elon certainly seems to think yes. And, you know, based on his recent comments, we're looking at potentially surpassing human driving
next quarter,
safety. Yeah, in the next quarter. So crazy.
He said that stuff for a while. I hope that he's right this time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yes, I would agree. You know, I've seen him making these predictions for a long time, and I always wondered when he made those predictions, like, how is that going to be possible? Like, I don't understand how we're going to actually make that happen. And of course, he has information that we don't, and so maybe he's right. But I was always very skeptical. But my understanding of machine learning and the progress, and then the rate of progress that we're seeing these days, like just seeing how far FSD has come from, you know, as far as customer cars are concerned, we went from version 11, which was, you know, okay, but not great, to version 13, which is really, really, really impressive. Maybe not quite, you know, production ready for robotaxis yet, but very close in the space of a year. And, you know, we're scaling all of the inputs that go into machine learning all at the same time. We're getting more compute, we're getting more data, we're improving our algorithms, we're working on new hardware, we're trying to figure out how to improve the overall memory that's available to the systems. And like every single one of those things is one axis on which that you can improve the overall performance. And so when you're doing multiple of them all at the same time, you know, I think that it's at least reasonable to think that we'll make progress at the same rate that we made last year. If not faster progress. So like, where are we going to be at the end of 2025? And I think that, you know, at this point in time, I would be surprised if Elon's not right. Before, I would have been surprised if Elon was right in his timeline predictions. Now I'm going to be surprised if he's not right.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the most interesting thing is he's always like, we'll solve it next year. Like, it's coming in 2026. You know, we're still a year away. Like, it's later this year. This is like the first time in a long time where he said, like, it will be solved next quarter. This is like, they must be running versions on the robotaxi that are scaled, that are working, that they feel very confident about, if he's going to come out publicly in an interview and make that kind of claim. He knows the memes. I mean, that it's 2 weeks away, you know, he references it with SpaceX too, right? We take the going from like, what is it? We take the impossible and make it late or something like that is his joke. So, I mean, they caught a booster out of the air a month ago. They're going to do it a couple months ago. They're going to do it again on Monday. Like, they're really making things happen. Like, I believe in what he's doing at this point.
Yeah, I think a lot of credibility has come back for his timelines, specifically, well, Tesla's timelines. Once Ashok, the leader of AI for Tesla, put that initial sort of like, hey, this is how we're going to hit, like, this is when we're going to hit these metrics and like these milestones for FSD V13 and all that good stuff, and then they hit them. I mean, maybe they missed slightly, but they were within weeks, right? Versus like they were literally within 2 weeks, versus before he would say 2 weeks and it was 2 years, right? So there's now some credibility that has returned from their approach.
Totally.
And it's so exciting to watch. And I agree with you. I think the comment of saying like, hey, like they are now giving guidance. It seems like now they're giving guidance based on actual things that are happening internally that they're seeing with their two eyes, instead of trying to extrapolate forward based on what they're having while trying to hit those goals. You know, trying to be educated and trying to be, you know, trying to think about it in a proper way. But because they were working with such a novel solution to such a novel problem, of course, it's going to be difficult still. When you keep saying the wrong thing, when you keep being wrong over and over again, you know, what do you think is going to happen? But I think that's coming back. I think that confidence in the timeline's coming back for sure.
Yeah, there was a period I remember, like, after 12.3.6, that was like the default version on, like, pretty much everyone's car for, like, the last year. there was a period of time where they released like 12.4 that only went to like the early access testers group. And I'm not in that group, unfortunately.
If someone from Tesla is watching, put them on that group, damn it.
Thank you. You're
welcome.
But
and we need James Dalma on that group too.
Yes.
There you go. There you go. But there was a period of time where they released 12.4 to a small group, and it went out to that group. And I just remember watching a few videos from like Dirty Tesla and like Chuck and being like, well, there's a bunch of regressions here. Tesla's AI team seems to be stuck figuring out how to scale this approach with the neural nets, like to the next level. And then they never released that full. And then 12.5 came out and it seemed like they were back on track. I remember Elon said something like, we're training this on too much intervention data instead of like the correct driving behavior. And then it seemed to pick up from there. Overall, though, I think the most interesting thing is they refused to put like release notes in V12 for the longest time. It was like that generic, like almost like a joke at one point, like we've replaced all the code, blah, blah. You know, it never really seems like a comment or like a release note that the public should have even have gotten. And yeah. Now they've seemed to have laid out like a roadmap to finishing version 13. You know, it's a package of these different pieces. And if they feel like that's release note worthy at this point, they've, in my opinion, at least cleared that like hump of, you know, we know what we need to do next in order to scale this. Like we have the Cortex like thing online at Giga Texas. We just need to like go out and spend the time to do it. And it didn't feel like that for a period of time last year. So that to me is like the most promising part of the whole experience.
Yeah, that's a great observation. How confident are you given your let's say like your story arc with FSD in Manhattan and New York City? How confident are you that Tesla will reach unsupervised FSD that works in New York?
Ooh. I think they will reach unsupervised at some part in the country that's not New York City this year. And I think it's in part regulatory related and in part because like the pedestrian handling thing needs to be like beyond superhuman, because hitting someone with a car without a driver is another level of mistake. I think they will achieve it. I don't think that they will release Robotaxi in New York until late 2026 at the earliest. And I think that they will require hardware 5 or at least the modified hardware 4 with the front camera. I know that the Juniper Model Y that they just like announced and the Cybertruck both have it. I just think that they need like more ground truth data, like close to people up front, like they need to be like within inches of the front camera. And when they integrate that, because I don't think it's being used in FSD right now, it's only for like parking. When they integrate that camera, a lot of the like really, really tight scenarios that like you could see the car go through on the left and right side, I think that they'll be able to much more closely validate like that front bumper data and will be a lot more comfortable releasing FSD unsupervised in New York. So my guess is, modified version of hardware 4. I think they're on like 4.1 internally or whatever. So hardware 4 with front camera and late 2026, I would say they are testing a very small fleet of robotaxi cars in New York City. That would be my guess.
How often do you drive outside of the city?
A lot. I do a lot of driving everywhere. Okay. I just drove to like Wayne, New Jersey today to pick something up for a ski trip I'm going on. And gotcha. I mean, it's so good in like those scenarios.
If have you experienced V13 outside of the city, and how would you rate your experience with V13 in the city versus outside of the city?
Yeah, it's the same. The experience is absurd. I have not, people probably yell at me online for this. I haven't had a single intervention with the car outside of the bridge and tunnel system. Once you get proud of that, I've been fine. I mean, I have a lot of highway driving time. I have a lot of time driving in like, you know, local municipalities. I did some videos on 13.2.1, like in the Hamptons, like in the Sag Harbor area out east on Long Island. And like, the video is boring, gets like 2,000 views. No one even watches them because like who wants to watch a car go around like a big turn, turn the blinker on and like pull into a parking lot? Like there's nothing fun about that.
Yeah.
It's good out there. Occasionally you'll have like someone like rip the stop sign over and it's like tilted like 45 degrees and the person sees it. So they stop, but the car doesn't see it. So it just like, you know, we'll roll through it after it like creeps up, but it's so few and far between at this point. It's crazy how good it's gotten.
Yeah. I think that's what's interesting to me is like, if I think about Austin, Texas, and I think about, you know, Glendale, Arizona, or Miami, Florida, or Orlando, Florida, or, you know, just Chicago. Well, I mean, Chicago's kind of nutty too, but, you know, LA is kind of nutty and SF, that's not too bad. But like how many municipalities are out there in the United States that truly would be able to, where Tesla would be able to launch unsupervised this year outside of like, let's say New York City and the craziest places. And I bet you 80% of those municipalities, they'd be able to do it no problem. Like no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. 100%. Okay. There's nothing. So, I mean, I think that, you know, they released their disengagement data or whatever. They don't release the disengagement data, but they claim, you know, 10X, whatever it is, you know, they write that in their tweets. I didn't really agree with their like version 12.5 is like five times better than, you know, version 12.4, whatever they were saying at the time. Right. And part of that is because the car would do stupid things. And the other reason is because it just like wasn't smooth, especially in the Model X, because like that thing, you know, it's a chunky boy. So they were clearly focusing on like the Model Y and Model 3. Like that's their best selling car. Sure, I get it. But this is the first time where I turn it on and people who used to get car sick in the back of the car from my not so perfect, you know, regenerative braking profile, like as a human on the highway, have sat in the back of the car and do not get sick. And the number of decisions that it makes are as wrong as way down. I don't think it needs to get any smoother. Like they've solved the smoothness problem. It's now like, will it do something stupid at a time in which you can't expect? And the times are getting much less and less and less, but it has to be zero, or it has to be at least 10 times less stupid than the best driver on the road for it to be acceptable. So
yeah,
they're still not there, but they're close.
So let me ask you questions about like other people that have gotten in the car with you. So how often do like, let's say non-Tesla nerds like us get in the car with you, and how often do they experience the software?
I would say somewhat regularly. So my wife also uses the Full Self-Driving software all the time. So she's very reliant on it. She's very comfortable with it, I guess, is what I would say. She takes it back and forth into like the heart of Brooklyn. You know, she was originally a very hard sell. Like it would phantom brake.
Like every wife.
You know, pass the wife test. Yeah. It would phantom brake on the highway and she'd be like, turn this off. Like there were times even as early or as late as like 12.4 or 12.5.4 where you would see like approaching traffic and she'd put her hands up to like brace for me to like hit the brake really hard. Like doesn't happen anymore. So
okay.
I've gotten more comfortable giving people tour or like demos too, because I don't want to look like a complete idiot when I like talk up the software and then like drive like garbage. The first thing everyone asks or says is, wait, like this is real? Like you're actually not touching the wheel? Like, I don't even know how this is. Like no one even knows that it exists, which is crazy to me. And then you proceed to like drive and talk about it for the first 10 minutes. You know, people are very interested initially. They want to see it do some stuff. You're just like, yeah, like look, no hands. You know, I got my hands up, like showing them as a party trick. And by like 10 minutes later into the drive, everyone's forgotten the car is driving itself. And you just get to the destination. And I'm like, look, guys, I'm just going to like let it pick a parking spot. It doesn't do it perfect yet. That's not implemented. But when it does, people are just like, so like you didn't touch the wheel or like the pedal the whole drive. I'm like, I literally didn't even need to be in the driver's seat. Like you could put my dog in the driver's seat and it would have obviously like beeped the whole time and then shut off, but it could have done it. You know, you can't get too complacent though at the same time. I don't want people to think that I'm like sitting here with my eyes shut when I'm recording videos, just like letting it like do crazy stuff. Like I'm paying attention. It's like going over those bridges is a scary experience when you're using it, but I trust it now to enough of a degree to let it do it.
Yeah. I think that's the, again, like to your point, is the lack of awareness of this feature set to this day is like completely mind-boggling to me. And it feels like the company's finally at a point where they can begin to market this truly.
Totally.
Like to actually make this a selling point of the car outside of Elon posting tweets about it in some respects, right? Or maybe I don't know. Like it's, or maybe it will create so much demand that I don't even want to go into the sort of the logistics behind if they should or not. But it does feel like anytime, you know, that whole button seats sort of discussion that the Tesla community often has is like the best way to sell the car is to put butts in seats. It feels like that feature, FSD specifically with V13, has become that. It's like that has become a core piece of it. Would you agree? Sounds like.
I mean, it's a careful balance for one reason, which is like if you put these, you know, layman people who don't understand how the car is going to act in FSD, and you convince everyone that it's like nearly perfect, right? What's going to happen is you're going to have two separate groups. You're going to have the people who are like, I can't believe I've never used this before. Like, this is the greatest thing I've ever used. And you're going to have the people who are like, I had to take over once on like a 40-mile drive or twice, or I had to tap the gas and this sucks and this isn't what I paid for. So I think that Tesla could probably start marketing it as the supervised system, but you have to be really careful because it's like you only really get one like introduction to the world with this.
Yeah.
And if people are like nervous about it, like you're going to lose a big sect of people who never tried it and are like not, you know, going to just trust it ever again after, even if it is perfect 6 months later, you know, you lost those people at least for like a year or two until their expectation resets.
That's a great point. And this is why I think the unsupervised portion of the software is so interesting. It's because the way they can go to market with unsupervised is such a difference than supervised, right?
Yeah.
With supervised, you're still putting the ownership of the car in the driver. So you're tying the entire experience of driving to the person behind the steering wheel. So that's, you know, if the car doesn't behave at a stop sign properly, around a pedestrian, at a traffic light, and in places like New York and New Jersey where people got no patience, it's like you're filled with anxiety because you're like, oh my God, I can't, like, it wasn't my fault, but the person like doesn't care. The car,
they don't understand, like, I wasn't driving.
Yeah, exactly. They don't give a shit.
Like, what do you mean you weren't driving the car?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I think what's interesting about the unsupervised variable is that if from the get-go, the car says, you may do whatever you'd like, and if I need your help, I will let you know, that severs that responsibility.
Totally.
From the car, and then the person, if something gets handled weird, they probably don't even know it's happening because they're on their phone.
Yeah, 100%.
Or talking to somebody.
Like, you don't care, like, it's lane selection on the highway, like,
right.
Or if it goes like 55 or 61 miles an hour, like, you're annoyed when the car is driving 2 miles an hour over the speed limit and you're like in the driver's seat because you're like actively getting honked at.
Yes.
But like, people will know. Like the RoboCab doesn't have a steering wheel when they pass the car on the highway. They'll just be like, oh, like kind of how they give the Waymo the excuse. Oh, it's just the Waymo, you know, it's doing its like weird thing. You know, it's like stuck. People are just like laughing at it. People aren't laughing at you when you drive in the right lane doing 30 and a 50 in the Tesla and you're like supposed to be supervising it. Not that it does that anymore, but I agree. They need to get it to that point. I mean, I enjoy being the guinea pig, though. Like, it's cool to, like, watch the tech improve. But they need to introduce it to the world at, like, a large scale in the unsupervised fashion for it to be, like, a major, major selling point of the car.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Hans, did you want to jump in here with a topic before I switch it to a couple things?
I mean, I do think that there is still a lot of room left to go with even supervised as far as it being a monetizable feature and it being a selling point for the car. Like once, and I think really it's likely that 13 is pretty much there. It's just somewhat difficult because 13 is only available for hardware for cars for the time being. It's kind of a limited sub segment of the overall fleet. But, you know, in a hypothetical future, a year from now, when there is a version of FSD that works on hardware 3 cars as well as version 13 works today, I think that they could put out a, you know, like a free trial again, get a whole bunch of people who've tried it in the past who didn't like it and say, hey, you can have this functionality for $50 a month. In as a, your introductory rate, or $25 as your introductory, or like free for 3 months, and then it will be $100 a month or whatever. I think you would see a huge, huge uptick in the take rate on FSD. And even just that is like a huge signal in the overall, like that's one of the signals that I've been waiting for a long time, is when do we see, and I don't care if it's robotaxis or if it's supervised, but when do we see software revenue on Tesla hardware just hit that inflection point and start that steady growth profile? Because once it starts, it's not going to stop, because the technology just keeps getting better and better and better and better. And yeah, and even if it's just the signal of, hey, people are adopting the technology and we're not even monetizing it super well, like we're just trying to do the butts in seats thing, but people are sticking with it, like they're using it. Like, you know, if you see the free trial and you see the miles just like spike up of usage, like even that is a huge leading indicator of when we can actually expect this massive inflection point to just re-rate the entire margin profile of the company.
Yeah, I think their subscription like pricing model is like the worst thing of the, like the they need to change this. Like it started like $5,000, right? For the purchase. Then it was like 8. And then it was like 15 for a short period of time. And now it's back to 8. That's like the purchase model, right? The FSD transfer thing is like, some months you can do it, some months you can't. If you do it out of order on the app, you just lose it altogether. Like they need to decide, this is how much the software is going to be. And we got to stick with this. You have a lot of upset people who have hardware 3 cars, who spent $15,000, who don't want to buy a new Model Y, and are stuck with an inferior product on a system that cost twice as much as it costs now. They have to solve that. Then the $99 a month thing is great, but like some people don't want to try a piece of software for $100 a month. And I know the free trials are a thing, you know, they're rolling those out, sure. But it adds insult to injury when you get a free trial on your hardware 3 car and it's still stuck in the old version. I think what they need to do is allow you to pay for FSD for like a 24-hour period, like a really low prorated amount, like as if you were getting in a cab and paying a small rate to be in that cab. Like, for example, you want a road trip across a country. You only want FSD for 5 days or something like that. So they just divide the $99 by 30 days or whatever. You can pay on a per day rate or some sort of modified version. I think you would see a lot of people who only would have used it for road trips realize how good the software is and then be like, oh, I am going to pay the full month amount, or I am going to buy it and then own it at that point. Like that, those are like the small levers they can pull to really loop or really pull people in on these things.
I 100%. Think that we will see them get real flexible on the pricing and go to market strategy exactly, you know, along those lines, whether it's that or whether it's per mile pricing or something, after we pass that safety threshold that Elon expects that we're going to pass with Safer Than Human. I think that, you know, the reason that we haven't seen those types of strategies is because they, you know, the system is safe, but it's not as safe as they want it to be to like maximize the user base.
Yeah, the one person that uses it for like 12 hours, if they have one intervention, they'd be like, I'm good. I don't ever need this again.
Yeah, 100%. I'm glad you brought up those points, because I was on this channel for a little while before Elon announced that Hardware 3 owners would get a free upgrade of the hardware if they can't get to unsupervised, which was, I think, a huge milestone and a very important one for Hardware 3 owners. I think in addition to that, they need to give Hardware 3 owners the ability to transfer their FSD to any new car that they want. Their thing. Yeah. So like, if I want to upgrade to a new Model Y, just let me transfer my FSD, because here's the deal. The robotaxi revenue that car can generate, okay, is ridiculous, regardless of what car has it. If it has an unupgraded hardware or whatever, that unit right there can generate so much money. And if you want to upgrade the hardware, great. If the person wants to take advantage of it in Hardware 4, just let them transfer. Just let them transfer their thing to the new car, and then they can
be a permanent thing.
Yeah, yeah, permanent thing. Exactly. I think that would go a long way for Hardware 3 owners as well. And I think it's totally something that benefits Tesla as well, because then that car that doesn't have the FSD thing that you take that token from and put it in the new car, you're still going to end up upgrading the computer on that car anyway, right? So then Tesla, I don't know, they can just buy it back or whatever, or whoever has it, they take it in for the upgrade when it's ready, and all of a sudden, that's a cash flow generating machine, you know? Right. So it's like the money's coming in at some point anyway.
Right.
So
it's like, it's a tricky message, though, because once they say, we will, in perpetuity, give every person who has a Hardware 3 car the ability to transfer FSD to Hardware 4, and if they don't have like the, or you could upgrade the hardware option free of charge, they've effectively said, like, we don't see a legitimate path to upgrading Hardware 3 equipment, whether that be the cameras or the driving computer, to a fully capable, full self-driving car, unsupervised, like the Hardware 4 cars. So I'm curious to see what they do. If it's just the cameras, or if it's the computer and the cameras, like that's a very different retrofit than just like swapping out the computer and just like plugging it in. You know, they got to like take the car apart to switch the cameras out.
Yeah. Go ahead, Hans.
Yeah. I think there's a couple different factors at play there. It wouldn't surprise me if they do give you, you know, one transfer.
Yeah.
Once robotaxi services are live, like, you get to transfer this one time to one car that is now like unsupervised robotaxi capable. But you know, I like anyone who buys those new cars, you're not going to have to buy FSD or subscribe to FSD to add your car to the network. And so you're going to have the ability to earn revenue regardless of whether or not you have FSD when you are driving. And so like, there's not really like a economic forcing function for Tesla to want someone to have FSD on the car so that it will be eligible to participate in the robotaxi network. Like, that's not going to be a factor. It'll just be like, do you want to have access to unsupervised self-driving when you're in the car and it's not on the network? That's really the only relevant use case. But I think that I would agree that, you know, especially Hardware 3 owners that bought FSD, you know, in 2018, 2019, 2020, when it was $15,000, like you said, like, they should definitely get that transfer if they haven't already taken advantage of it, which I think a lot of people have, to a car that is eligible at some point in the future, just because that's the right thing to do for the community.
It's very strange that when Hardware 4 was released, Tesla has never in any press release or on any place on their website acknowledged explicitly that your car is Hardware 3 or Hardware 4, right? They recently added a note in the like description on the service page. That's, and if you don't know what to look for, like, that's what it is. So there are people who bought Model 3s in 2023, like a week or two before the Highland refresh, who bought their car, it has the same manufacture date as my car, who don't have Hardware 4 cameras. They need to do a better job of explaining to people that your car is this version of the hardware cameras. Like, this is our roadmap for this. There are a lot of people who like will buy new Model Ys in the next 6 to 8 months, right? When they announce or when they come out in the US, everyone assumes they're Hardware 4, right? But like, what really is the, like, what's included in that package? Like, that now has that front camera. What differentiates that from Hardware 4 on my car? Why does the new Model Y have a, you know, the rear camera has like a weird shield on it? Like, why they need to be more explicit with these changes and explain to the average person why you need this hardware set to achieve this goal. They don't do a good job with that. And they've never done a good job with that. They didn't do a good job with 2.5. They didn't do a good job when it was, you know, Mobileye back in the day. They just don't explain it to people.
Yeah, I think their approach has just been go as fast as you can, get to unsupervised, and then once we're there, we'll figure out how to handle the carnage we've left behind, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's Tesla's approach this whole time. You know, talking about economic forcing functions, I think the largest economic forcing function is for Tesla to ensure that their existing fleet can operate in unsupervised robotaxi, and this includes Hardware 3. So there's a large forcing function for them to upgrade the computer, upgrade the cameras, whatever they need to upgrade so that it can generate cash in some jurisdiction somewhere.
Totally.
Right? So I think in some respects, if you have your hands in a Hardware 3 car, at some point, there is going to be you're sitting on an asset that can generate cash for you. But it's unclear when, how, does it need a upgrade or not? Is there going to be an extra charge involved, right? That's where it gets really, really opaque. And like I said, I think Hans's point is excellent. I think once they reach the safety threshold higher than a human and they start rolling out robotaxi networks somewhere, then there's going to be a lot of clarity around this because it's a very important thing. If I'm somebody that wants to capitalize on this business model and I want to be able to buy a bunch of robotaxis and put them on my fleet, and Tesla's giving me guidance that Hardware 3 will get there at some point, but the market hasn't priced it in yet for that car and telling me they're going to upgrade the computer, what's stopping me from buying 100 Teslas and then just giving them to Tesla to upgrade the freaking computer? And all of a sudden, I've bought these assets for like 1/5, 1/10 of the price it would have been. Once they announced that, you know, once they made that upgrade official, I think, and maybe that's the confusion. I don't know.
No, I agree. I mean, it's, we have no idea. You know, Elon made that one claim when someone like yelled out in the middle of the robotaxi event, but like, we haven't heard or seen anything papered saying like, we will upgrade everyone. This is the means of doing it. And I think the minute that they do that, what you're saying is like buying a fleet of a bunch of Model 3s, like, and trying to get a big discount, that's out the window because then the risk is priced into buying the car. We know it's going to happen, but we're kind of in this gray area right now. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Are you an investor as well in Tesla?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Do you mind if I pick your brain on a couple of things, how you view the company from an investment perspective?
I'll do my best to give honest answers.
Okay, cool. So this is not financial investment advice, et cetera, et cetera. So how are you thinking about the robotaxi FSD piece in relation to your investment to the company? Like what's the thesis behind you having the stock?
Yeah, I mean, I've owned it for a few years now. You know, we've gone through some crazy cycles, to say the least. I don't necessarily think it's fully priced in. Like if the average person gets in my car and doesn't even know that technology exists, like the vast majority of retail investors are probably not very aware of it either at this point. I don't think that it will really get priced in until they are doing fully autonomous drives without people in the driver's seat, just because, you know, the technology to a lot of people is no different than like Blue Cruise or what is it, Super Cruise that GM's got. So that's terrifying. That's a whole nother discussion. Like I nearly like died in the car with that recently, which is a good story. Really? Yeah. Like not really died, but like I'll explain in a minute.
Okay.
But I don't think it's priced in. I don't think the robotaxi is priced in. You know, a lot of people, including myself, I mean, the event was cool. It felt a little vaporware-y, like it was like a dog and pony show, you know, with the dancing optimists. I don't think that's priced in either. People think that's like a complete joke. But I think that when they are real, when they're selling the Optimuses, when the FSD stuff is priced in a little bit more, I think the sky's the limit for the stock. And you know, all of its recent, you know, up and down is just noise. And it will have like that NVIDIA type spike where it like tripled, quadrupled in like 4 months. And I don't think there's any looking back from that point. But that this is my opinion.
Right.
I do not buy options. I'm a long-term investor. You know, to me, the stock has made me money, and I'm going to continue to hold it until, you know, I can buy a few roadsters with the profits.
Nice. Yeah. Go ahead, Hans. Yeah.
Yeah. Was your investment the part of the reason for you to try FSD and like, you know, watch and validate their progress? Or was it the other way around? Did you try FSD first and you're like, oh, maybe I guess I should do some investing in this crazy company?
I mean, I've always believed in Elon and what he's done with his companies. You know, I bought stock before I got to experience FSD. I've been an investor for several years. I bought more after trying FSD. So I guess it's a bit of both. I believe in the company. I believe in the tech. I still don't think that it's priced in. And I continue to buy more. Obviously, like when it's like at $4.75 a share, which it was like a week and a half ago, it's like, oh, like, is it going to keep going up? Like, is this just like some sort of, you know, crazy streak it's on? But I'm happy to buy it in the 300s right now. It feels like a good deal. And yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see it really. I'm not sure what's going to happen next, but no one is.
Yeah. I think that the most interesting thing of what's happening in the last like few months, there's three major things. If I sort of like, because I've been working on this video for the longest time, and every time I try to like say, okay, I'm going to pull the trigger on publishing it, I get a new bit of information that kind of like changes how I'm thinking about the story. The Trump election, I think, is a huge thing for Musk totally. Industry. That is gigantic, regardless of political leanings. Like if you, there's no other argument but to say this is a huge bonus for Tesla, SpaceX, et cetera, et cetera. It's obvious, yeah. Right? Then you have the advancements with full self-driving, the breakthroughs they've had with the end-to-end neural network, the cyber cab unveil, the fact that FSD v 13 is performing as well as it is, the fact that it's still the mini version of what's happening, and it's not even on the fullest training compute cluster of what they're working on, and it's and it's potentially running on 1/10 of the long-term compute they'll use in the next year or two. It's like, that's insane, crazy. Right? It's yeah. Crazy. Okay, so that's another piece. And then the third one that we just got a day or two ago, we got some Elon numbers, but you know, there, so you have to bake in a level of like, hey, this is going to happen later, but it will happen. It's just going to happen later. 50,000 bots built by the end of 2026, and then another 10xing a year or two after that, I think was the guidance. Is that right, Hans?
Yeah.
Was it 10x? Yeah. So yeah. You're going to go from...
He essentially said, you know, 10x for 3 years in a row or something. So
yeah, crazy. Yeah,
pretty crazy.
Insane numbers.
So we're going to go from like, let's say 5,000 in 2025, which they'll probably hog all to themselves, to 50,000 by 2026 of the bots, which again, they'll probably hog all to themselves. And then starting in 2027, we'll get to 500,000. And then in 2028, we'll get 5 million. Okay, and so what does that mean? It's like crazy. And then they continue the ramp upwards, right? Because the human or robot market, you are limited by the supply that you have and the manufacturing process you have to build a robot. The demand is essentially unlimited, given that the tasks are available for that robot to actually do them. And any yeah. new markets and any new tasks that society demands for that robot to do, right? So it's like you're not only addressing current TAM, you're addressing the brand new TAM of the 2030s world that will demand a different level of a labor from a robot, right? So it's like, I don't even know how to think about that because it's like, it literally just breaks my brain. And so it's like, you have those three things in tandem, and the fact that Tesla's going to go through this growth spurt between FSD and the bot is happening. It coincides with the Trump administration that's going to give Elon maximum support to achieve his goals, right? Like, I don't know what happens.
It's 2025 right now. He's not inaugurated. He'll be president until 2029.
Correct.
January 2029. Which is pretty much like the entire like development rollout of the like bot. It's pretty much like the entirety of the unsupervised rollout. I mean, we don't even have to get into the whole, like, they'll be back on the moon. Like, all of Elon's companies are going to benefit.
Yeah.
It's like, he has a lot of support for a long time. And as long as something doesn't happen where he sours his relationship with Trump, like, this is, like, he's in a very, I mean, the companies are in a very good position to skirt regulation that would have been put in place by the big automotive companies, or, you know, the FAA in the case of SpaceX and stuff like that. Yeah. And I mean, they're really well positioned. It's just crazy to think about how like it all lined up perfectly for them.
Yeah. And the fact that Wall Street tends to like wait and see, right? Wall Street's not going to do what we do. Wall Street's going to be like, yeah, this is all great, but I want to see in the P&L, like to your point, I want to see in the P&L multiple quarters in a row. But it's like, and I was wondering this to myself, is like, I'm sure, like, I wonder why more people don't behave in the way that, like, let's say this group behaves, where it's like, it's a chance we're taking here. There's a risk reward, right? The risk we're taking is like, hey, this thesis that we just planned out is likely to come to fruition at X percent, right? And if it's like outside of a black swan event, or like you said, Trump and Elon sour, and then, you know, he turns into what mainstream media says into a dictator, right? And he starts sort of bashing everybody into the ground. Okay, cool. So what's the likelihood chance of that? And again, famous last words, knock on wood, but if it feels like it's way more likely than not that the thesis we just planned out will play out. And if that plays right out, the valuation of the company today doesn't seem to properly reflect that future. Like, it, like that value hasn't been brought forward at all. At all. We've returned back to the 2020 valuation, 2021 valuation, right?
So I mean, like, the stock reacts to their sales. Like, that's it. Yeah. Like, they have a quarter where they, like, somehow Wall Street comes up with this, like, 515,000 car prediction or, like, yeah, estimate. They, like, they miss it by, like, 20,000 cars. They're producing as much as they can sell. Like,
yeah. Weird.
And what is what's the name of the effect where everyone waits? The Osborne effect, right? Where, yes, everyone, like, 3 days after the quarter ends, like, ta-da, here's the new Model Y. Like, the pent-up demand for that car, whether you like the whole, like, CyberCab light bar thing, like, the interior is going to be vastly improved. Like, all these things, people are waiting. Like, if Wall Street is only reacting to, like, the sales of the cars and, like, their battery storage numbers, like, they have a lot coming for them. Yeah. They can't wait till they put the services, like, dollar for dollar, like, this is what we're making on FSD subscriptions, yeah, or on that part of the they're very, 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 like, coy with that. They don't even show the Cybertruck sales broken out. I think they're lumped in with the X and S. Yeah, which, yeah, I mean, I guess, sure, for now.
Yeah, but, for sure. To me, it's if I were Tesla, like, what is my preference for them breaking out the business on the P&L? Just give me total car units, give me total bot units, give me service revenue, AI revenue, yeah, from the car business, give me AI revenue from the bot business. That's it. Just give me those four lines and give me the margins for each. You know, that's it. That's all I want to know. I don't even really care about, honestly, the units they sell, the cars and the bots. Just give me the service revenue. Like, give me the recurring revenue that you're getting from the AI business, right? That's ultimately that is the long-term profit lever that Tesla has, is that, yeah, AI revenue on their installed hardware base. Like, exactly. Like, but again, like, it's proof. It's like, it's such a good point. It's proof that Wall Street doesn't care about AI right now because they react to the unit sales of the hardware, not the long-term potential of the service revenue. And that's the thing, it's potential, yeah, right? They don't care, right, about potential. They care about now or even next quarter.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you another company example that I think that they don't look at AI properly, and that's Apple. they, in my opinion, are so far behind whatever they've released. Like Apple Agreed. Intelligence is a shell of it's what dog they promised. Shit. It's horrible. I use it for Genmoji to like make fun of my friends. And that's it. Like I asked ChatGPT to do something, but it's just going out to ChatGPT. That company, like Apple is like at a, what? They're almost at their all-time high right now. Like they're close. And they are so far behind. Like the fact that they don't have a model for Siri that doesn't rely on ChatGPT to me is insane. And Wall Street should, in my opinion, be freaking out about their like complete miscalculation that AI is still several years away. And Wall Street doesn't care. Apple sells a shitload of stuff. Like they sell more phones now than they did last year. And they're, you know, margins are better now than they were before. You know, that's what they look at. And they're not looking at the fact that they're going to get beat into submission unless they like come out at WWDC next year and like blow everyone away. I mean, that's another example. It's crazy to me.
It's crazy, dude. It's like we're so close to like a company coming out with like, I remember that rabbit AI thing that was out, that little stupid orange box.
Yeah, the one that Marquez like drilled into the ground.
That he ended along with Fisker and another company.
The AI pin, that was the other one.
Oh, the AI pin was the other one. So okay, so what's interesting now is like, I don't know, do you play with AI agents at all? Like with your workflow and stuff? Like do you do any of that stuff where you go out?
Not very much. No.
Okay. So I started dipping my feet into this, and I showed Hans and David, our media guy in the background, some of the stuff that I've been working on. And it's becoming so obvious that we're going to live in an agent world, an AI agent world, whatever you want to call it, bots, AI bots. I don't care what you call it. But these super smart, extremely smart sort of prompts that you tell it to do something and it just does it for you. It can be whatever, right? It is absolutely mind fucking blowing to me right now that this is not on the iPhone now. Now.
Makes no sense. That's like the whole basis for like NVIDIA's CES thing, right? Like they have all these like layers and you can like bake them into your business and it just like does everything for you. It's crazy. The iPhone's been relatively unchanged for the last, like since the iPhone 10, like.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same phone.
It's mailed in.
The camera's a little better. Yeah. Sure. Like even if they make a folding phone next year.
Who cares? I mean,
it's the same thing. Like they don't do anything that's risky anymore because Wall Street would be upset if it went poorly. I mean, look at the Vision Pro. I've tried it. It's a cool product.
Yeah.
That's clearly not baked into their stock price because no one buys them right now. But like they spent, I mean, how many hundreds of millions of dollars developing it for it to literally be like production is paused. We're working on version 2. This is like a proof of concept. Like they've mailed it in entirely on that. So like where are the glasses that are using the Apple visual intelligence that you wear that just turns you into like Iron Man? You know, like where is that? That's what they need.
And like that, when people hear that in the audience, it's like guys, we're not like we have it. We have what we need. Like Meta already has glasses that will last you a few hours of, you know, just come up with the screen thing and then just hook up to the phone to do all the compute. Come on. Let's do it. You know what I'm saying? That's so frustrating. Dude,
yeah, Apple is, I know.
I totally like, I 1000% agree with you. Apple is the most frustrating company on earth.
They canceled the car project.
I know. Yeah.
What are you doing?
Crazy. So much cash, so much talent. And it's, again, it's another like the telltale sign. Innovator's dilemma comes up time and time again.
I mean, if they had a track record anytime recently of actually being able to deliver on something like this, you know, you might be able to give them the benefit of the doubt because, you know, in the past, they would be the latest to the game on implementing a good feature. But when they finally implemented it, man, it would be killer. Like it would work so well. And like, you wouldn't have all the hassle you have to have when you did the same thing on Android, you know, a year or 2 years earlier. But like at this point in time, I just don't have any confidence that they're going to ship it at all. And then, like when they finally do ship Apple Intelligence, and it is dog shit, well, like, why are you, you know, if you're going to ship dog shit, then why are you late?
Right. Steve Jobs is rolling in his grave. I mean, you think that this would have made it out of the lab? It wouldn't even have been a presentable moment if Steve was still around. I always wonder, how would Steve Jobs have looked at the AI environment and been like, and what would he have done, right? I mean, that's a completely another like rabbit hole conversation we could talk for an hour on. But crazy.
Tim Cook is obviously looking at this in like, okay, we have all these hardware devices. Like, how do we maximize revenue on these hardware devices using this AI widget magic wand? And Steve would have been like, wow, AI is going to change literally everything about the way that humans interact with technology. Like, what do we have to build so that humans can interact with technology the best possible way that humans could in this new realm of possibilities?
Right.
And yeah, it's really sad that we don't get to have him here for this moment.
Man.
And that's why I like the Tesla stuff so much, because you do have that guy that sees what's happening, that is willing to take the risk. And we're going through, in my opinion, a period that's very similar to like the initial iPhone and, you know, the first like 5 to 7 years where the chips doubled in speed and the phone looked totally different every 2 years. Like, that's where we're at right now, in my opinion, with full self-driving and the Tesla stuff. I mean, to bring it all back. That's why I like it. I used to be a massive Apple fanboy. You know, I would get home from school and watch WWDC and like call out sick and stuff. But it's boring now. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know, congrats. They like upgraded the Tetra Prism lens to receive low light, like with 5% extra of light. Like, bravo. Like, I know it's an engineering feat, but like, who gives a shit? Like, it doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, that's such a great point, man. And I'm right there with you. It's like, man, that's what makes Tesla so exciting. I mean, it's Cybercab and Bot will be the most exciting products of this decade. Some of the most important. Yeah, for sure. Because I'm very excited to see what other people will come up. I bet you the next Steve Jobs is probably doing something like he's building or she's building. Like, somebody's doing something right now that in 10 years time, even outside of Elon Musk, going to look and be like, holy fuck. Okay, everything's different now. The way we've interfaced with reality and technology has changed fundamentally, just like how self-driving cars will fundamentally change how we interface with transportation. The fact that we're going to go from being pissed off the entire time we're in the car to not even have to worry about being in the, like, actually paying attention. Oh, and by the way, it's way more comfortable. Oh, and by the way, it's cheaper per mile than whatever you could own. I mean, that is a fundamental breakthrough. That's a fundamental innovation and disruption of how we interface with transportation, going from point A to point B. Human robots are going to do that with labor, like our fundamental relationship with labor, which opens up a gigantic can of worms that we have to talk about on separate videos. But anyway, dude, awesome conversation, Jordan. Thank you so much for coming on, dude.
Thanks.
This was awesome. We'd definitely love to have you back later on, especially as you get some breakthrough updates on your car for New York City. Tell people where people can find you on X, YouTube, and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I would love to come back. And you can find me on X at the @athletes. So it's athletes, if you couldn't pick that up. So the @ @HLETES. And you can find me on YouTube at SavageJunkie96, which is a holdover name from when I used to make RC car videos when I was like 12 years old. But it's never going away. I'm stuck with it.
Hell yeah. I love it. Thank you so much, Jordan. Make sure you go check him out.
Thank you.
We'll have links in the description and comments. Thanks, everybody.